I'm Kieran.
And I'm Eve. This is Kitchen Table Cult.
We're two Quiverful escapees talk about our experiences in the cultish underbelly of the religious right.
Hi, everybody. What you're about to hear is a slightly different format of an episode. It's something that we've been playing around with, not this episode specifically, but the style we've been playing around with for the last 6 months or so.
Yeah, there's been stuff happening. But this is the first time that we're trying it out on an episode that you're going to hear immediately. So let us know what you think of it. And thank you for your ears.
Enjoy. On Monday, March 11th, the Alabama Political Reporter published a piece about how the Agatha-Prattville Library Board had been pressuring Library Director Andrew Foster to remove a list of 113 books that they had deemed to contain adult content. The list included things like picture books about pronouns and bodily autonomy and consent. And Foster had been pushing back against this demand with appeals to existing processes. Since the list had been created by the full Library Board, he argued that the rules required the library board to make the decision of a categorization change for these books in an open meeting.
I'd like to ask some clarification on how my interpretation of the new policy is incorrect, Foster responded. I stated in our meeting that the change policy states that, quote, the Library Board of Trustees reserves the right to exercise discretion over all library material, including but not limited to books, quote, which seems to be what comes into play here, that the library board is exercising that discretion regarding the list of books I was given to have them moved to adult sections due to the change selection criteria. However, since that is a decision of the full library board, the board is required to make those decisions in an open meeting per the Open Meetings Act.
By Thursday, March 14th, the library board had convened for a special meeting during which they fired Foster. An Alabama.com article reported that Foster believed he had been fired for complying with the FOIA requests by the Alabama Political Reporter for the email exchanges about the list of books to be recategorized that had been reported in the initial article. Once all these emails were out in the open, it became clear that the intention for the recategorization was not to protect children, but to reduce the materials in the library representative of the LGBTQ community and their stories.
Then, on March 19th, the Prattville City Council meeting had dozens of public comments about the library, the new board, lack of transparency, and how much this is hurting the very people that the parental rights extremist group behind the anti-library push are allegedly trying to protect, children. That was Prattville resident Jackie Nix. Thank you, Jackie, for giving us the rundown of what happened in Prattville. But at the end of March, we spoke with three people who are taking on the fight on behalf of children's rights and intellectual freedom from an organization called Read Freely Alabama. Let's meet them.
My name is Jessica, she, her. I have a master's in library science, and I've worked as a professional librarian for 15 years. I serve in the senior leadership team of Read Freely Alabama as a library coalition coordinator, which means I coordinate and lead and facilitate activities between Read Freely, the Alabama librarians, and other interested parties.
My name is Dr. Marissa Allison. My pronouns are she, her. I live in Huntsville, Alabama, and I'm an organizer and co-founder of the Madison County chapter of Read Freely, Alabama.
My name is Sam Olson, she, her. I'm the parent of two homeschool kids, the spouse of a combat veteran, a second-generation Unitarian Universalist, and a founding member of Read Freely, Alabama.
We were really excited to connect with these folks and wanted to share their perspective today because what we've seen happening in Alabama, we've seen crop up in other states, Florida. But what makes Alabama unique is that rather than starting with public schools, like we've seen before, they're starting with public libraries, which is especially dangerous. And Marissa and Sam are here to explain why.
In terms of my personal ties, I have always been interested and committed to protecting intellectual freedom. I am a longtime academic, a sociologist by training. I've worked in higher education for over 20 years now. I've taught thousands of college students. And in the past couple of years, my wife and I decided that we were going to homeschool our child. It was largely for two reasons. One, with the pandemic and having high-risk family members, including my wife, and noting that precautions weren't being taken in the schools to keep families safe. And then two, the state of Alabama decided to pass a Don't Say Gay bill that applied from kindergarten up to fifth grade. What that meant for my family is that we didn't know how that would affect our son's education, being that he's coming from a family with two moms. So, interestingly enough, the library is, which I didn't know because I grew up in public schooling, the library is one of the main resources for homeschooling families. We already use the libraries and support it. You know, libraries are, as a sociologist, are very valuable to our society. They're one of the last third spaces available, meaning that people can just go there and be there without having to participate in any sort of exchange of money. And they're open to everyone. So I feel very committed to protecting a space like that. So the interesting thing regarding homeschooling that I wanted to say is that, you know, the campaign to censor books for children largely in the United States has started within the school system. Alabama has really started in a different direction, which is that it's starting in the public libraries. I absolutely assume that it will be and is already moving in the direction of school systems having to address it as well. But I think that one of the reasons that it started in the public libraries is because of the homeschooling population in the state. The irony of that for my family is that the reason that we are homeschooling, as you can tell, is because the public schools are starting to be dictated in a way that I remember growing up homeschool was. There's been kind of a flip-flop. So my wife and I decided to keep our son home, which is not something that we had planned to do.
And now back to Sam, talking about the same issue.
So in the last year, this group calling themselves Clean Up Alabama has been driving an effort to remove any and all materials they find objectionable from public libraries. And they intentionally conflate terms like sexually explicit with sexuality because they feel that any mention of non-heteronormative sexual orientation is inherently sexual and therefore inappropriate for children. They want to remove toddlers' board books like Bye Bye Binary and children's picture books like Who Are You?, which is a wonderful book that explains the difference between sex and gender in a perfectly age-appropriate way. They've targeted tween literature like Alice Austin Lived Here because the protagonists are non-binary youth. They've also targeted educational nonfiction like It's Perfectly Normal, which explains puberty and sexuality in a thorough and very affirming way. They are also extremely transphobic and have gone to great lengths to erase trans stories from the public narrative. And the whole thing with kids is really a red herring because it's not about protecting children from reading specific books. It is about erasing those books from the collection. They don't want these stories to exist in public forums. These people want to control our shared narrative. They feel entitled to decide which identities and which history is appropriate to be told. They really do think that the family of Leave It to Beaver is somehow more worthy of representation, more American, than the family of ABC's Modern Family. And the thing that's scary is that if they successfully set the precedent that LGBT-affirming content is inappropriate in library collections, then they're one step closer to making it inappropriate to be non-heteronormative in all public spaces. We're talking about rolling things back to before 1994 when Don't Ask, Don't Tell was the hot idea. From the beginning, I've been saying that this is about erasure. The erasure of books about marginalized people is a proxy for the erasure of marginalized people themselves. So we've been showing up at city council meetings and legislative hearings, trying to warn everyone that this censorship won't stop with LGBT content. They've also targeted books for having controversial racial or religious commentary, which is something that should alarm any constitution-loving American, regardless of how they feel about LGBT issues.
And here's Marissa again to expand on that about what it looked like in her library.
What we know is that that is disingenuous. That, in fact, what is happening is not just book censorship, folks wanting to move books out of the children's section of the library, but a sort of conflation of materials that are LGBTQ in content as being sexually explicit. So some of the books in our own library that got moved were only moved because they either mentioned an LGBTQ character or a child who had two moms. So they were only being picked up and moved because of the conflation that any mention of gender identity or sexual orientation was conflated with sexually explicit material, which is highly offensive. The standard way that that happens is that they'll show up to a library board meeting with a particular book, a passage of it taken out of context. They either read from it or photocopy like one page and hand it to library board members, or say they start at city council or the county commission. And then taken out of context, they use that to sort of orchestrate a moral panic that pornographic materials are in our libraries, which is just not true. There's not a library in the state of Alabama that has pornographic or obscene materials. So what they are trying to do now is, just last week, they introduced legislation in the Alabama legislature, in the House, that would change the definitions of obscenity within the state, that would, one, move away from a standard that is called the Miller test. It's been in place since the 1970s, I believe, which is a 3-prong test, and each of those 3 prongs have to be met in order for material to be considered obscene. So in changing the obscenity code, they're not just changing the content of what is obscene. They are also changing the exemption that makes librarians now criminally responsible for placing, quote, obscene materials on the shelves of the library. Interestingly, there are no books with sexual content in the children's section of the library. There's a large conflation between books that are in the young adult section with books being in the children's section, and the terminology is used kind of broadly. What a two-year-old with board books is going to see is drastically different from what is developmentally appropriate for a 16-year-old child. I think we all know that, but it's very quickly conflated to these materials exist in the library, and because they are in the young adult section of the library, my two-year-old could just toddle over there and grab that book off the shelf. So in moving to change the obscenity codes now, what they are doing is asking for the library and librarians to act in loco parentis for them. What that means is that they want the library to be curated based on their particular personal belief systems, which is antithetical to what a library should be if we're actually protecting the right to read and intellectual freedom for all.
So this specifically that Marissa is describing is what Library Director Andrew Foster was pushing back against, this recategorization of these kids' books as adult content. And what's at stake here is important not to get lost in the weeds with the details of this fight. A lot of people outside the South want to write off the South as white supremacist and homophobic, but most queer people in the United States live in the South, and most people of color in the United States live in the South. And the library, you'll hear these people talk about this further, is supposed to reflect the population that it serves, just like the elected officials are supposed to reflect the population that they serve. And just like the issue of gerrymandering, we're seeing these groups like Clean Up Alabama and Moms for Liberty trying to be the tail that wags the dog. They're not the majority here, and they are trying to run the show and run off balanced representation of the community. And of course, none of this is happening outside of a historical context. Let's hear more from Sam about that.
The thing I didn't realize until quite recently is that Read Freely Alabama is actually about connecting people. None of us knew each other prior to joining RFA, but we've all been pleasantly surprised to learn that Alabama is a lot more ideologically diverse than people realize. We're terribly gerrymandered. We have effectively a one-party state. There's no real risk of being challenged from the left, so our politicians worry more about being flanked from the right. The result is a government that is ever increasingly extreme and does not adequately represent the people it serves. Read Freely Alabama started to protect ideological diversity in public library collections, but what we're really protecting is the ideological diversity of Alabama. Our opponents don't like that word, diversity. But diversity of thought is vital to having a healthy democracy. We cannot allow viewpoint discrimination in public forums.
And this is something that Marissa has seen as well in her chapter of Read Freely Alabama.
It's been fascinating to see how quickly people have organized in their communities, because the vast majority of folks do not want censorship in their libraries. The Every Library Institute conducted a study just a couple years ago that showed that like 75% of Americans do not want any form of censorship in their libraries. But I think maybe people don't realize is just the sort of diversity of folks who are in Read Freely Alabama. And in particular, the thing I often say is that our organization is as diverse as the books in the library. And people are coming into this fight from so many different, backgrounds, political belief systems, religious belief systems. It's honestly quite shocking. One of the things that I would say is something that we do need to work on, though, is that this movement, on the face of it, is largely white. And I would be remiss if I didn't say that the tactics that are being used now to sort of create a moral panic around LGBTQ content in libraries are tactics that were created to suppress Black voices within our libraries as well. Whether they're Black authors or actual library patrons, the South is where we saw such a large portion of that activity happen. So there is some work that we need to do, you know, within the book since anti-censorship movement to envelop anti-racist practices and decentering whiteness here, because this is not a new issue. If we think about materials within the library that have been combated for years.
Yeah, that's something that I've noticed too, is a lot of the rhetoric that we've been seeing has been recycled through decades and decades of anti-civil rights activism. For a lot of us who grew up homeschooled and maybe went to Teen Pact, that can be a little bit activating because it's so familiar, which is something that I asked Jessica about because Jessica was also homeschooled and went to Teen Pact.
My involvement with Read Freely has truly become a full circle moment. My life, of course, was defined by libraries. As a homeschool kid living in the middle of a literal cornfield, 30 minutes from a big city, it was the world I needed to give me the books and the characters and information that I needed. My life has also been defined by Teen Pact, a conservative Christian group that train homeschool teenagers on government and civics, leadership, and how to win the culture for Christ. I grew up in Birmingham. I moved here to Prattville, Alabama, which is about 30 minutes away from Montgomery. In 2011, I have tried to get out of Prattville since 2012. I thought it was full of just small-minded, small-town people with no really good restaurants to eat at and nothing for me here. However, I never got to leave. I've been here now 12 years. I work as an academic library in another institution here in the area. And I was sitting minutes from the library in Prattville when the extremists began their attack. And I watched it play out over a few months, and I listened and heard the propaganda and tactics that sounded very familiar. I knew who the enemy was that was attacking Prattville Library, and as it spread the libraries across Alabama, I knew their strategy, I knew their tactics, I knew their message. I knew all that because the enemy used to be me.
Jessica isn't the only person that this comes full circle for, though. Sam experienced this from kind of the opposite end of the political spectrum.
I honestly feel like a lot of my childhood was leading up to this. When I was about 9 years old, my family moved from Madison, Wisconsin to Newburg, Indiana, which is right on the banks of the Ohio River. Now, Newburg is technically on the northern bank, but it felt very southern to me. And one thing I could not understand was the importance of church. My family had always attended church, but I was not used to other people asking me about it. I definitely wasn't prepared to explain it to everyone I met. Unitarians have been present in America since the colonies, but most people are unfamiliar with Unitarian Universalism, which is united by a set of shared values rather than a specific doctrine. A church without a shared doctrine is a difficult concept to explain as an adult. As a 9-year-old kid, I had no idea how to explain this. So the other kids would ask something like, "Do you believe in God?" And I would say, "I'm agnostic. I'm still trying to figure that out." That sort of answer was not satisfactory. So the other kids decided I worship the devil and must be ostracized accordingly. I was bullied pretty heavily for the next few years. So like a lot of kids in that situation, I drew into myself, spent a lot of time reading, and I really loved my trips to the local library. And looking back, I can see the similarities. The library outside of my church was really my only safe space. They didn't care if I believed in God or not, and the librarians didn't treat me like an untouchable sinner. At a time when it felt like everyone in the world was judging me for going to the wrong church, the library was a secular refuge. And my experiences in Newburgh definitely stayed with me in ways that I'm still unpacking now at almost 40 years old. But because I've experienced being a religious outsider, I've always felt very strongly about the separation of church and state. I'm not anti-religion, quite the opposite. I've read enough history to know that religious liberty cannot flourish where people fear being charged with heresy. Theocracy stifles religious freedom, and secular government protects it. When I heard about these censorship efforts in Prattville, efforts that are 100% driven by a theocratic ideology, I felt compelled to speak up. The right to individual expression, the freedom of individual conscience, is literally one of the seven principles of Unitarianism. So this attack on intellectual freedom feels like being bullied all over again. I really couldn't justify being a bystander, so I started with a little Facebook group called Read Freely Alabama. I sent out a few invite requests to friends, and then the whole situation just exploded.
I love how personal this is for both Sam and Jessica, because it's an important reminder that the library is a microcosm of the larger issue and is an easy place for this to become personal for so many of us. We've talked about threats to media and, you know, reporting the truth and being able to like know what is real and all of those things so much on the show. And the library is part of that fight. And everyone has a story about what the library means for them. And I love what Read Freely Alabama is doing and has become, because it's a reminder that one person saying, hey, wait, like this is a problem and I don't like this, can make a difference. Because if you have a problem with something, if you are upset about something, probably somebody else in your community does too. And it's worth, you know, waving that flag and seeing who rallies around the issue. And this is not just an Alabama problem, as we well know. Look around in your community. But I'll let Sam take it from there.
Too many people, including Alabamians themselves, tend to shrug this off as like a typical Alabama problem. It's not. This attack is happening across the nation in Idaho, Montana, Texas, Arkansas, Indiana, Michigan. You get the idea. There are probably challenges underway now at your own local library. So when was the last time you attended a meeting of the library board? I never had a single thought about my board before last August. So don't dismiss this. Pay attention. It's happening everywhere, and without a doubt, part of a larger, more troubling trend. As Americans, from a very early age, we are taught to have an almost worship-like reverence for the Constitution, and libraries really represent the very bedrock of those constitutional ideals. We may not agree, but we all believe that we have a right to disagree. And that's really what's at threat here. They're trying to remove dissent. They're trying to remove contradictory opinions. They have a complete intolerance for anything that doesn't agree with their worldview.
And Marissa's take on this idea is perfect. I'll let her.
I heard a quote that somebody said that is often said about libraries, is that 25% of a library should be something you don't like or don't really want to be there. I think that's a good way to make a library accessible for everyone. There should be something that pisses all of us off. And then the general rule to that, and the rule that you should share with folks around you, is if you pick up a book and you don't like it, then you should just take the following steps. One, put it back on the shelf.
I love it. I love it so much. It reminds me of like just sort of having, like, kind of navigating this a little bit when I was a kid and thinking about, like, well, is it bad that the library has books that, like, aren't Christian? And then realizing that, like, you know, there are people who aren't Christian who use the library. So it's only fair. If I don't want my stuff to be censored, then I should allow other people's stuff to exist.
It's very XKCD, someone is wrong on the internet. Just, you don't need to engage. If you don't like it, you don't have to. It's like, this is part of the point of free speech in public spaces. Mm-hmm. It's great.
Your kink is not my kink, and that's okay.
So we hear next from all three of them, Marissa, Sam, and Jessica, about what to keep an eye on and how to be involved in protecting your library.
I would say both in libraries and school boards. If you see people come and they have, you know, these books that they're reading from, I mean, there is, like I said, there is a sort of calculus to the method at which they can make things change. If you see books being challenged in your local library, I encourage you to go get that book and see why it is being challenged. The likelihood that it's being challenged somewhere else is very high. You could probably find information online very quickly about it. So I think that people outside of Alabama should be paying attention to this coming there. As I said, as goes the South, goes the rest of the nation. And so this is going to be happening all over if it's not already happening in your community.
And Sam?
The first place to start is just to actually visit your library and talk to your librarians. Take a peek at the catalog and look for the commonly challenged titles like Genderqueer, The Hate U Give, The Bluest Eye. Look up the most recent winners of the Stonewall Award or the Coretta Scott King Book Awards. At least a few recent winners should be in your library collection. If you can't find any of them, start asking why. And another thing to look for is whether books are shelved in the appropriate section for their intended audience. For example, in Prattville, there's a book about sexual health. The title is We Need to Talk About Vaginas, and it's clearly intended for curious adolescents going through puberty. But in Prattville, that book is in the adult section on a high shelf, well above my own eye level, and I'm tall. How is that accessible to a library patron who actually needs that book? The lack of access is a form of censorship. If you see books being tucked away out of reach or absent from the catalog altogether, time to start asking your library board for an explanation.
And finally, Jessica has some really good tips as a librarian.
Just generally, and speaking as a librarian, you need to familiarize yourself with the library's existing policies as well as their online catalog. Both of those typically will be found on the website. A quick Google search will help you find that. If you cannot find the library policies quickly, I would call the library and ask. But most of the time, the policies will be findable on the website. You're going to want to look for particularly the collection development policies, check the circulation policies, and what is called the reconsideration policies, or reconsideration process, or a challenge process. First, it would be just good to educate yourself as to what is occurring and what already exists. I would then schedule a time for a public, like in the public space, meeting with the public library director and ask if they have it, a cataloger, acquisitions librarian, and have them discuss their process with you. Take them coffee, take them donuts, build a rapport. Tell them, hey, I am nothing but a supporter of what you all do. Establishing that relationship might and will probably allow them to inform you if there's any issues you need to be aware of. I would monitor. Another thing I would do is to monitor the social media pages for your city in your town. Just a regular library search or something like that. The name of your library. Just see if there's any scuttlebutt going on. I would look for any type of private Moms for Liberty groups. Not that you can join them, but if they're in your area, something's probably going to come soon. I would recommend educating yourself as to how the library board at your library is selected. Apart from that, monitoring, establishing a relationship of trust with the librarians, and familiarizing yourself with your state laws on open meeting acts, on public records requests, on the First Amendment in general, as well as the 14th Amendment, as that does come into play with public libraries and representation in a collection.
And just as a reminder for everybody, the 14th Amendment is the right to privacy and the First Amendment is freedom of speech. And the reason that these come into play is because books are obviously speech and people have the right to privacy when it comes to like checking out books and using materials. And like this comes up a lot in whether or not parents can review what their children are checking out. This is where all of that argument is based on.
So now we know a little bit about what to look for, how to get to know your librarians and get a feel for what's going on in your community regarding your library in particular. Now we hear from Sam talking a little bit about how to support the Read Freely Alabama folks, and especially the situation with the Agata Prattville Library System.
So if you're in Alabama, listen closely, because this is for you.
Join Read Freely, of course. But even if you don't join, the first thing to do is simply to start talking about the issue. Libraries occupy a unique spot in the confluence of government agency and public forum, and there's really important conversations to be had here about the shared story of Alabama. Who has the authority to censor this narrative? Who gets to decide what is or is not a perspective worthy of representation? Where do we draw the line between free speech and obscenity? How do we teach the children the hard lessons of Alabama's history? These are definitely things we should be talking about right now, because some people feel entitled to make these decisions for the rest of us, and those people are definitely showing up at your city council right now.
And they're showing up at your city council outside of Alabama as well.
Yeah.
Which is why those of us who don't live in Alabama should be taking this seriously. Jessica has some really good points about why it's important for people outside of Alabama to be paying attention.
It's coming for you, if it's not already there. Granted, in other states, it might be less extreme, given the political apparatuses at the state level. But don't be fooled. Alabama was the test case for Moms for Liberty attempt to do to public libraries what they had done to school libraries. Prattville was that test library. What is happening in Prattville with librarians fired outright, good, decent humans just terminated for no justification? Terrible. Terrible policies that will ruin everything about that library. That is what's coming for the rest of the country.
So go to your library meetings, basically, is what we're saying.
I mean, it's what we were talking about with Eddie, Molly Conger for libraries. Where is she? We need it. Be it. Be her.
Be her. Be her for your own libraries, please. And thank you. What else can people outside of Alabama do, like not just for their libraries, but as part of the greater discourse? Is a question that we asked Sam and Jessica and Marissa, and they all said, take the South seriously.
And which, duh, but
obviously.
Let's hear from them.
let's hear from Sam.
Yes, please stop dismissing us as uneducated rednecks. Now, I am guilty of this myself. In fact, I owe an apology to someone I knew 20 years ago who was a progressive from Alabama. And I said and felt some things about that I am not proud of. So, Dave, if you happen to hear this someday, I'm on the record saying I'm sorry for my snotty Yankee opinions about Alabama. I was wrong. I get it now. On a recent episode of his show, the comedian John Oliver said that Alabama's history is brave citizens protesting while their government is either the last to do something good or the first to do something terrible. And I think he nailed it. The most important thing people outside of Alabama can do for us is the same thing that they can do for themselves. Protect the right to vote. End gerrymandering. Advocate for ranked choice voting. These are all nonpartisan, common sense measures that ensure the health of democracy.
Sam also had some really interesting insights that Marissa talked about at the top of the episode about why public libraries are being chosen.
I do think that it's interesting that they chose public libraries. I think a big part of why they chose public libraries is because while they're going after school libraries in other states, here in Alabama, they've already kind of censored the schools to death. And honestly, most of the most extreme people are already homeschooling, so they don't use the school libraries, they use the public libraries. Public libraries really strike a chord with people. They sit right in the middle of government agency and free speech. They are locally controlled, but they're also, this fight is happening at the state and the federal level. So there's a lot of facets to this that make it kind of the perfect vessel for having these conversations. It's a kind of microcosm of things that are going on a larger scale in our country right now. And I can't do anything about those trends that are occurring at the federal level. But my library is right here in my own backyard. I can do something about my library. So this issue is driving civic engagement in local politics like nothing else. There are a lot of people, I know I'm not the only one, who never particularly paid attention to their city council meetings before, but now they're showing up to the city council for the library issue, and while they're there, they're hearing about other things going on in their town that maybe they would care about. And so there's fresh civic engagement in local politics, and that's good. That is all good for democracy in America. That's especially good for democracy in Alabama, where we need fresh civic engagement because it's always been the same players over and over. And these folks are so entrenched in the power structures in Alabama, they don't have to worry about what the popular public opinion is. They don't even necessarily have to be very competent. We're learning that competency is not a requirement for public office. So I assure you, whoever is listening to this, if you live in the state of Alabama, you are qualified to run for local office. Go ahead and do it.
I'm also here to tell you that you are qualified to run for local public office, regardless of where you live, because this is systemic.
I'm just thinking of the trend on TikTok of the, you know, how hard can it be? Boys can do it.
Yeah. And they suck at it. So someone please relieve them.
How hard can it be? Republicans can do it.
Exactly.
I really love this note that we're ending the episode on from Marissa about not abandoning the South. And we've talked about this a little bit already. But she's talking about some specific movements and some things that she experienced growing up as queer in the South, and I will let her take it away.
I mean, the first thing that I think of as a sociologist is what W.E.B. Du Bois said as goes the South, so goes the rest of the nation. That has been true over and over and over again. And the attempts to censor materials in the library is not just happening in the South. It's not just happening in Alabama. It's happening everywhere. So I think it's important for people to pay attention, because I think people discount Alabama as just being Alabama. And Alabama becomes a descriptor as opposed to an actual location with people. I would say generally just about the South is that, you know, the diversity of the South is why people should care what's happening in the South. What we know from research is that more LGBTQ adults live in the South than in any other region of the country. Civil rights, you know, found its home and fight in the South, right here in Alabama. So we can't just wash our hands of what is happening here. I've been very impressed by the Stay Appalachia Project, and hopefully your listeners are, if they haven't heard of it before, they'll check it out. But it's a youth-led movement across Appalachia, which Alabama is part of, particularly North Alabama, where I'm at. So I am right now, you know, on the edge of the Appalachian foothills. And as an LGBTQ youth in Alabama, when I got old enough, I left. I knew that, or I felt that, you know, it just wasn't safe for me to be here. What the Stay Appalachia Project is trying to do is to help marginalized youth in the region to stay committed to staying so that things can change. And, you know, generations like mine that were coming out of the 1990s when I graduated high school, what we did is we left. And so the pushback against censorship, but also LGBTQ rights and everything else is really, it hasn't kept up with where it should be, because folks like me and my wife, we didn't stay. Obviously, people need to leave if they're unsafe. And, you know, with legislation moving in the direction that it is for LGBTQ folks in the South, I think everybody has to make that decision for themselves. But what I love about the Stay Project is that it's creating a community of folks who can be there to support one another. And that is what we need right now, is that community.
I love this so much, because this is a mindset that is applicable outside of the South. This is what can shape how we are active in our specific geographical places. It is what can shape how we get to know our neighbors and understand what's going on in our libraries and in our schools, and become politically active in ways that will make a real difference, even though it will be gradual and granular. Just saying, like, I belong here and this is my community too, and continuing to show up, like, obviously, like, safety first, but where you can, it's so important. It's so, so important. I love this ethos so much.
Well, I mean, we keep saying, like, change is local. Change happens where you are. The biggest impact that you can have is not at federal government. It's in your local community, in your local organizations, in your mutual aid collectives, in your, like, city council meetings, in your library and school board meetings, in your local transit agencies. Like, everything that matters is local. And if you have the resources and the safety and the ability to engage in your own local community to make it safe for yourself and others, that's where you're going to have like the biggest impact. And that's where everything matters, because they can't take that away from you easily.
Yeah. So if you are local and you're in Alabama, there's something that you can do that's coming up soon. And this is part of the timing of this episode is centered around that. There is an April 30th public hearing that Read Freely Alabama is encouraging Alabamans to show up and testify in. You know, you can contact there's an administrative associate, Vanessa Carr. We'll put her info in the show notes and tell her you want to speak at the April 30th public hearing, and you can prepare your testimony and just talk about why you think that it's important that the library represents, the library materials represent the community that it serves. If you're outside of Alabama, you can follow Read Freely on all their social media platforms, and they have a donation spot on their website. We're excited to have been able to give them space today and share their perspective and their story about what they're doing and what's been happening, because I think this is really representative of, you know, how things are going to be going, how things have been going, and is worth supporting and paying attention to.
Yeah. Check out, join Read Freely Alabama. If you're not in Alabama and you want to get involved in your library, specifically the organization Every Library is a really good place to start. That comes recommended by the Read Freely Alabama folks. So show up where you can is the TLDR of this episode. Thank you for listening and for your patience in the lateness. It was a lot of work to coordinate 5 people for this episode.
So. It's a lot of back and forth, but we got it done. We got it done. Thank you so much to the Read Freely Alabama team for recording their answers to our questions and to talking with us so much about what's been going on and being willing to share their story so openly with all of you.
And thank you everyone for listening and for engaging in the ways that you are able. We'll see you next time. Bye. You've been listening to the Kitchen Table Cult podcast. Our music is from the track Janet by the band The Heavens on their album Stenazzo. Our producer is Dave the Great. Our podcast is made possible by Patreon donations from listeners like you. To support us and join our community on Slack, check out patreon.com/kitchentablecultpod. Thanks for listening.